There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Live local talk, and glad you're here. Lots to do on today's show and some appointment listening throughout the show. Like, first of all, in just a second here, we'll talk to our buddy Todd Stacey with ALDailyNews.com, Alabama Daily News. Lots to get into with Todd. And I also want to put this on your to-do list for 1 o'clock. For the 1 o'clock hour, Richard Taylor from Taylor Martino is going to join us to talk about, this is a subject now I've heard from two businesses, more than one person in each business, but two different businesses said, they've called me this like in my personal life and say, hey, we got denied on our business interruption claims with their insurance companies. Okay, so they had business insurance and they made a claim that they had business interruption because of COVID-19 and the coronavirus. And these insurance companies, in the cases I've heard, I don't know if this is a blanket, but these insurance companies are saying, well, that's not covered. You know, people ask, is that an act of God, having a pandemic? There's a lot of questions around this. Well, you're not the only one that's been thinking about it, and it's something that has been discussed. President talked about it the other night, and Richard Taylor with Taylor Martino has been looking into it as well. He's going to join us at 1 to talk more about that. Plus, Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl, who says he thinks for the county, keeping businesses open and not reducing what's open in the county is the way to go. We'll talk to him about that and a lot more coming up at 12:30. And right now, the man who wears a face mask, not an N95, but the regular surgical face mask that has got to measure, I don't know, 2 by 2, 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet, something like that. And he makes it work for him. It's our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how's it going? Hey,
good. That's one hell of a face mask you had on during the presser yesterday.
Yeah, a friend of mine made those for us. She made several, and all were unique. But I've got a big beard, and right. And it's gotten bigger throughout the coronavirus.
Wait, it was like a hairnet version of a facial mask or a face mask for you.
It was big. It's all cloth. I'm not sure what she made them from, but I mean, it's legit materials. But yeah, it's a lot of masks. I could provide some entertainment yesterday.
The bunch of us here in Alabama would not be so immature to be laughing about each other's pictures with face masks on. Would that be possible? We're not that. We're grown-ups.
Well, I was a little bit surprised. You know, the governor had a press conference in the Capitol, and they're very smart to have, you know, everybody 6 feet apart, and the room's big enough for that. But I was surprised that I was the only one. I thought a lot more reporters and people would be wearing masks. I mean, now that I have one, I figure why not wear it in a public place like that when you don't know who might have what. I just, yeah, better safe than sorry.
You're showing off is what you're doing. You're showing off.
Well, I didn't sew the mask. I was lucky enough to have a friend that offered and provided one. Otherwise, I wouldn't. There's no way I would make it on my own.
Hey, explain to folks, too, what it was like there yesterday, because I was playing cuts from that presser on the show, and people know my proclivity to pick on the audio or the lack of audio quality for a lot of state and county events, and they said, why isn't that mic'd up? Why? And they were talking about the reporters, but y'all were all sitting apart. There wasn't a mic in front of you, right? So you had to kind of holler?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if you couldn't hear reporters' questions. And, you know, something like that, right now, they're not going to pass around a mic. But, I mean, it just all runs through the house audio, so they have an audio system there. They actually set it up back when I was there. And I wouldn't be surprised if the audio was a little off. That room is awful for good audio. And the microphone, I mean, half the time they weren't speaking into the microphone. So I think the TV folks probably didn't get the best audio. I was just recording it on my phone to get what I needed. So, but, you know, they don't really have much of a choice. They can't put us in the regular press room. It's really tiny.
So that's what I was just trying to explain. Yeah, let you explain to folks that the kind of the situation there yesterday. So you have this this press conference with the governor and Dr. Harris, and the big takeaways. I want to hear from you because I have some things I want to ask you. But your overall big takeaway from what the governor had to say, and then what Dr. Harris had to say.
Well, I think it's three things. Number one, that Alabama's doing well, right? We've made some progress. The last time we went to a press conference like this, it was, oh no, we're spiking. We have to do a stay-at-home order. This was the opposite of that. Look, you know, she actually thanked Alabamians for taking the order seriously and for really making an effort at social distancing. Therefore, the cases, you know, we're not seeing a tremendous spike in cases like we were. The social distancing is working. That's take number one. The takeaway number two is that that's the case, it's not time to reopen the economy all the way like some people have kind of urged her to do. She did say, look, she's going to look for these recommendations that are coming from Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth and all, you know, the business community is kind of compiling these things right now. They're supposed to get them on Friday. And she's going to look at that, but made it clear that, look, this is not the time to take it for granted. This is not the time to let our guard down and act like we're out of the woods. We're not. She was very stern on that. And the third thing is a question I asked, actually, that I think we're going to be talking about down the road. And that is that Dr. Harris said that we are probably going to see a pretty serious shortage of PPE, of the personal protection equipment that doctors and nurses and all these personnel need. Especially when we do reopen the economy. His point was, let's go a month ahead or 2 months ahead when we really do start reopening the economy and everybody wants a mask. Everybody that walks outside wants a mask. Well, there's just not enough to go around. So he said that could be a problem moving forward.
Okay. But the idea of, I thought it was interesting too, that while from Washington, the idea is, okay, different states have different issues and their opening times. Once we got past that 10th Amendment issue there with the president, that the states, once we moved beyond that, thank goodness he didn't stick with that one. He let that one go. That the governors have the rights to make these decisions, and I think that's wisest, right? Let them make their individual decisions. So also at the next level, Governor Ivey, she did something like talk about from Grove Hill to Gadsden and from Decatur to Dothan or something like that, the differences in the state might have different reopening times, right? So what's good from the feds to the state level is good from the state to the county or regional.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, if you think about a place like Birmingham, that has obviously been the hot spot. Birmingham, from the very beginning, has been a hot spot of this. They were the first to go to a shelter in place. I mean, we know that Jefferson County is a hot spot. Well, it would make sense for some of these measures to stay in place there longer, whereas some of the rural counties maybe not. So yeah, I think you base all that off data. In fact, one of the things she said was that she's asked the members of Congress, all our seven members of Congress, to sort of put together reports on exactly what their districts are looking like and what the economic situation is, what the health situation is, and maybe they could do it by congressional district. Now, you know, sometimes those are gerrymandered and have weird lines and everything.
Sometimes,
well,
Todd.
You know, Todd. Like Birmingham, for example, is divided up, I think, three ways right now. So is Montgomery. But still, it gives it a little bit of regionalism. We know that Southwest is Bradley Byrne. We know that Southeast is Martha Rowe. So it gives you a little bit of regionalism, but I think that's smart. It doesn't have to be a blanket, you know, big brush approach to the entire state when we know that certain areas are more at risk than others.
Right. And of course, you know, that I hardly ask anything that I'm not setting up a future question or a, you know, but part of it is I would look at AL1 here. So let me be the homer that I always am. And the situation, if you pull the numbers and look at it, from Mobile County to Baldwin County are very different, right? So both in AL1. So do you have to then start cutting up the pie even more narrowly? Because Baldwin County, I could argue right now, that could change tomorrow, but right now Baldwin County would seem to be, would come online to be open before Mobile County. You see what I'm saying? And maybe it's the same in Jefferson, tough. Shelby. And, you know, what do you do? For us, even though we're all inside AL1, there's some different stories within it, too. So I don't know how narrow you get. I don't know if any of us have the answer. I'm just pointing out that there could be a challenge there as well.
I totally agree with you. Plus, it's just tough to enforce because if I live in Mobile and I hear that Baldwin County is open for business, well, that's probably where I'm going to go. And it's going to be tough to control.
Yeah, and if I'm a business owner in Mobile, I'm like, what are you doing to me? You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's not. And look, you know, and the governor acknowledged, I think we've all acknowledged throughout this thing, there are just some existing disparities. I mean, the point that the retailers are making is a very good one. You know, the fact that big box stores like Walmart or Publix get to be open and mom and pop don't. And that, I mean, it's not fair. And I think they made a good point that part of it isn't safe, because if you ask everybody to stop going to, you know, they can't go to the place they're used to going, they have to go to Walmart or have to go to Target. Well, guess what? You're basically asking people to congregate in those stores or in those parking lots. And I've seen that here. So I think they've made some really good points. I think that's exactly, you know, again, to the second point the governor was saying, she wanted to let everybody know that those things are under consideration. They're not ready yet to modify the order. But I think this time next week, probably before then, you'll probably see some kind of, amended order, you'll probably see some kind of plan to say, okay, by this day, if we see these numbers, we're prepared to modify the order.
Okay, when we get back for the break, I do want to talk about that some more, and also get your subjective take to whether it was just some dodges by the governor on that question, or she really didn't listen to what the reporter was asking on the mom and pops versus the big box stores. We continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. You get a email in your inbox each morning, six days a week for free. We'll talk about that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:22, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Get back to our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Speaking of that, tell folks if they want to get your email for free in their inbox each, 6 of 7 days a week, how do they do that?
Yeah, look, it's really easy. And the best part is it's free. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. I'm sure many of your listeners already subscribe because I get that feedback.
That's good.
At the top of the page, click subscribe, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Like you said, it comes out 6 days a week. We don't publish on Saturdays, but every other day we publish everything you need to know about the news that's coming out of Montgomery or Washington or wherever. And there's been a lot of news lately, and there's going to be with the coronavirus and as the legislature gets back going again at some point and the election in July. So great time to subscribe. We'd love to have you as a reader.
You know, with deference and respect to Governor Ivey, I got to ask you a couple questions here. You were at the presser yesterday. The question stands out to me, although it's happened with regularity, is she was asked, I think, twice about that, what you brought up. Hey, you know, you've got, what if mom and pop stores could do the same things the box stores are doing by limiting people in the stores, doing whatever cleaning methods, you know, check the list. Why should they be closed? They can't sell the widget when the big box store can. And I, I, I either she just didn't understand it, or it was like Fred Astaire on a tap dance routine, man. It was, I got to say. I did think
there were a couple of questions, because I came to the press conference wanting to ask that very question. That was kind of, with that in the resources, when I just thought, because we ran the story about retail on Monday. I mean, this is pretty fresh for us. And I think the two times that I heard her get asked that question, one reporter had to ask it again because I don't think she heard it. There were a couple of questions where it was, I mean, it's pretty obvious she couldn't hear it. And
She heard it one time. She heard it one, because, I mean, she said, well, that's not the issue. The issue is like, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the issue is like keeping people safe. No, she was asking a specific question. I mean, come on.
That's what politicians do. They answer the question they would like to be asked rather than the question that they were asked, right? I used to teach people that.
Yeah.
But from a reporter's perspective, I got what I needed toward the very end. I think it was Brian Lyman who just kind of pushed her on it a little bit more. And his question was like, would you be open to that? You say you want recommendations. Would you be open to a different kind of application for small business going forward? And she basically said yes. Like, yeah, we'll see what they recommend.
Yeah.
And I think the frustration there on the just – My just from reading the room and reading her face is that she thought she already had answered it. Like, yeah, that's why we're here. I'm telling you that we're going to look at opening business. What do you think we're here
for? Yeah, but the big box stores have been open the whole time. I mean, if she opens it, she's going to, on the 28th, they said they're going to reassess and look at next month. That's fine.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes politicians and especially maybe they've been around that long. It was in her original remarks that the answer to that question was pretty much in her original remarks. So being asked the question, she's like, "Yeah, what are you talking about? I just answered that." So,
yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's a generous view, but I mean, you asked me. That was
no,
my reading.
And that's what I want. You were there, so.
And that was my question going in, and she answered to my satisfaction by basically saying, "Yeah, that's on the table. I've gotten a lot of free advice here. We'll some very good advice. We'll see what she didn't want to get ahead of what this committee is going to recommend. If she says, yeah, I really think we should open up those retail stores, well then what's this committee going to do?
Right.
The whole point was to say, hey, I want to ask this committee to give me to research and give me the recommendations on an actual plan, and then we'll figure it out. So maybe that's a generous view, but that's what I thought.
I'm not anti-committee. I do think this governor uses committees too much, but we're going to run out of time. So I want to get a headline. Also, cities, counties fear, this was, I think, yesterday, cities and counties fear losing out on U.S. virus rescue funding. The state could be getting as much as what, $1.9 billion?
Yeah, the state could get that would be everybody. That would be the state plus counties and cities could get up to $1.9 billion. But, calculations they're not official. Some of these groups out there are like analyzing it just to explain. But, Treasury hasn't come out with specific guidance. But, yeah, there's a lot of counties and cities who, look, their budgets are going to be just as impacted, if not more, than the state because of the reliance on sales tax and things like that. So it's a real problem. I think that story came at a good time because it communicates to the federal government, like, hey, y'all need to figure this out before these checks start flowing. Yes, states, need money too, but, the state of Alabama can get by a lot easier than a city that's going, kind of month to month or especially for the smaller folks.
Yeah, and the way I'm understanding it right now, Todd, is, and I, like you said, there needs to be further guidance. I may be putting the cart before the horse, but I haven't seen anything that allocates a certain amount of that to go to counties or to go to municipalities. So it would be at the decree, I guess, of the executive branch, right? The governor would decide who would get what, or would the legislative branch, I mean, how much could they say, well, this all goes to general fund, or this all goes to ETF, or this all goes to the cities and counties? Who says that? Who makes the call?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody knows at this point. That's so guidance from Treasury would be excellent. I know that the legislature doesn't want the ball in their court. They would like very much for the cities and counties just to go get, you know, get their money on their own, because that just gives them a, you know, they've got to figure out this, that disbursement.
Well, sure, the state would love to have, the state would like to have $1.9 billion and let the counties and municipalities go get their share, but that may not be the deal. It may not be, there may not be another check.
Well, I think, you know, many times when federal money, when the money passes from the federal to the state to the counties and cities, it goes through a DECA that's basically our grant writing agency. So that's possible. And they're used to that. If you treated it like grants, they're used to that. It's not really, I mean, this is a different sort of situation. It's a little bit like the oil spill, but
that scares us.
Scale. Well, yeah. and so maybe there are some lessons learned from ADECA and the state of Alabama from that that could be applicable here. But look, the feds are in charge. It's their money, and they need to tell us how exactly it's going to be spent. The story was simply saying, cities are worried, and I don't blame them. They know somebody's going to be available, but if there's a lot of red tape, that could be a problem.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. Y'all check it out. Once again, aldailynews.com. And Todd, we'll have to get you back on. And keep rocking that face mask, man. We love it.
All right, Sean. Be good.
All right. Coming right back, speaking of the county perspective, Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl joins us next on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Text line 343-0106, same for the phone line coming up. And coming up next hour, too, have you heard about this, or maybe you're a specific business that has been dealing with this with a, maybe you have a insurance policy for your business. This would be one of those business interruption coverage things. And I've been hearing stories, and two specific stories from specific businesses that have had issues with that in the fight against coronavirus and being denied. So we're going to get into a discussion about that coming up next hour. All right, we are joined now by Mobile County Commissioner and candidate for AL1 in the Republican primary runoff, Jerry Carl. Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, Sean, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm doing just, I think I'm doing good. I am thinking, my conversation with Todd Stacey had me thinking specifically about you coming on with us, and it's, I guess the ink is not dry on it yet, but a lot of people telling me it could be as much as $1.9 billion in federal money coming to the state out of one of the CARES Acts, right?
Right, and we got a notice yesterday that we'll probably be looking at somewhere around 27 to 28 million, but, and I say that with a big but, don't count it until it gets here. Then the next question is how are we going to utilize it? I don't have an answer. I hope we certainly can apply it to, in my opinion, to get some of these businesses back up and running and some jobs back going and getting people back to work and their attention back on their family and off of this virus that has cost us all so much.
Yeah, well, okay, that's one of the side roads I want to go down, because after the Attorney General's ruling about incentive money, I want to come back to that. But the process here, there is, so was Todd right? I mean, you're talking about that $27 billion. Is that a guarantee? Is it coming from Treasury that they're saying that this goes directly, or is it a deal coming that those in Montgomery say, no, for sure, this county will get this much? I mean, is it in writing?
The way I understand it, and we're all guessing at it at this point,
okay,
but that 27 to our 28 will come directly to Mobile County, and hopefully we'll have instructions on how, and usually it does, there's instructions on how it can be spent and where it can be spent.
Okay. So that maybe answers, of course, the ink's not dry, but that could answer at least one of those questions.
Right.
And now the other part of that is, yeah, in mentioning how to use it, you know, we had talked last week about this after the AG's ruling, and I get, you know, I kind of get both sides of this. From what I read and the AG put out, the law, I think, may read that way. But it's that what you can't use this incentive money to help out small businesses because we're already built in. You're not incentivizing anything, what's your take on it? Because I know you disagree with that, right?
That was county funds. These federal funds may have different, parameters around it. It may tell us that we can use it. It may tell us we can use it to subsidize something that we want to do with the county. Again, I mean, there's just so many ifs here. It's really hard to carry on a conversation about it until, you know, we get the punch list of what we can or can't do. Then we can figure out what we can do with it. But, you know, my focus right now is the business community. I think we've certainly got our hands around the healthcare portion of it. You know, our folks, the healthcare team in Mobile, volunteers, first responders, everybody's done just an incredible job. And we've kept these numbers to a very small percentage of what they predicted originally. And that's to be said, you know, we all should take pride in that because we all stayed at home and we all did what we were supposed to do. So now we've got to get our economy cranked back up. We've got to get these businesses back open. I mean, downtown's a ghost town, mm-hmm. but it truly is. And since this has started, not one person has talked about the toll bridge, possibility because there's not enough traffic to get backed up on the causeway. But it's a very fearful time, but, you know, we're going to come out of this stronger. And I think we've got some great leadership in place to actually get it done.
I want to talk about the business portion of it and something that's got a lot of conversation, I know, for you and people have been asking me about it while I'm glad to have you on right now. Your take here in a post you made or a post that's up on your Facebook page about business in the county jurisdiction, because the discussion's going on right now from Unified Command, you know, went down to 20% capacity in stores. It may be reduced to 10%, maybe limited to what essential items. You commented on this. What's your take on it, Commissioner Carl? What do you say for the county?
I get very nervous when the government starts telling me what I can and I can't do, and especially what I can spend my personal money on. And that's where that one really touched the nerve with me. If we have closed all the small businesses, that's what this pandemic has done, and we have forced everybody to shop at the box stores. That's great. We got a place to go and shop. Now we're going to fuss at them, or we're going to penalize them because there's too many in the store. I mean, that's too many rules and regulations for me. I feel like we've got a constitutional right. If we want to get in there elbow to elbow and we want to get sick, that's very poor judgment. Don't misread what I'm saying here. But I don't think that's the government's job to tell us every move we can or can't make. And that's the reason I pushed back on that. I had a real problem telling people where they can shop and how many can be in a building. I just don't think that's the government's job. Our first priority is protection of the country and protecting the people. And telling them what to do on a day-to-day basis, I think the whole community has been done a great job of staying at home. And we get a few bad people out there. Now we want to penalize everybody for those few people that are supposed to be crowding these box stores. My opinion, you have shopaholics just like you have alcoholics. And they have to shop every day. And they're going to go in these stores. There's going to be a percentage of people that are in there that you'll see every day. So, you know, you can't stop people. We're in America. We're not in Russia. You know, you can't just stop people and tell them, you know, you can't go shopping there. You know, you have to wait. How about if you're 80 years old, a man that called me, 80 years old, his wife's bedbound. He's the sole provider for her, a caregiver, and he has to go stand in line in July until he becomes a 10% to get in to actually purchase stuff to take care of her. What's that going to take, a couple of hours out in the heat in July? It's not going to work. It's not going to work. So we have preached hygiene. We have encouraged people to change their habits. I think we've done an incredible job. I have not shook a hand in probably 3 weeks, which is amazing as an elected official because you're constantly shaking hands. But... you know, there's so many encouraging things on the horizon right now. We need to get excited about that. And don't penalize everybody over a handful of people's bad judgment.
Okay. And that's the problem, though, that's the way it's done. Because the folks on the healthcare side are going to say, listen, Commissioner Carl, what you're calling for is just massive spreading of coronavirus that's going to prolong this situation, prolong the issues in our area. I had a lot of listeners yesterday call in and say, you know, why not focus on the individual business that's not doing the social distancing and not punish everybody? I don't know if there's a middle way to do that.
The problem with the coronavirus is not the virus itself or the disease. The problem with it is we don't know. That is the real problem, because if we knew it attacked 61 to 65-year-old men that are overweight, we would know who to vaccinate. We would know how to vaccinate, and we would have all the answers to that. And then it would become just a normal virus in the chain. And our system will build up those immunities over a period of time. But the problem with this one is we just don't know. That's the problem. We don't know. We don't have enough time to have dealt with it. I honestly think I had it back in December and 1st of January. And several people I've talked to feel the same way. You get tested for the common strep throat or flu, and you've got neither one, and they send you home. And back in January, sinuses, drainage.
A lot of people have said the same thing, but the same way I can't say that it wasn't around in December, I can't say that for sure no. It was. You know, I mean, I have to look at it both ways. And there's a lot of people that are for sure it's been around a long time. You know, it's been around months before they told us. I don't know that for sure. I mean, it could not have been. You know,
well, if this works like a normal virus, this time next year, majority of people will have some type of immunity built up in their system. That means that they won't need to get a shot for it, or vaccination, flu shot, but or being part of that flu shot. But it means that we will have built up some amount of it. But the biggest fear of this particular flu is just the unknowns, and that's you're seeing you're just seeing the fear of it, and fear is no way. I mean, it really bothers me knowing I can't go visit my grandchildren. I talked to my wife last night. She was in tears. You know, she wants to go see the grandkids. She wants to pick them up. You know, and at my age, that's what we're living for. What we're living for.
But so, if I'm to believe what I'm being told, you know, by the best practices, I'm staying away. I'm staying away from my family in deference to them.
We're doing it too. I'm just saying, but you know, it's just the stress of that, and I'm watching people, and they're short tempered, and yep. They're not as cautious with some of the things they say. And I'm one of those. I seem to get a little snappy with people, but you know, it's kind of like being locked up. We're Americans. We're used to jumping in the car and going where we want to go, buy what we can afford, and it's just very strange times. But we will make it through it.
Hey, can you hold on with us during the news break here? Okay, we'll run the news break and come back more with Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl. We got some of your questions on the text line. We'll get those in the mix and ask some of those. I got some other questions too about, okay, that's Commissioner Carl's perspective, but you also have the Unified Command that has Commissioner Ludgood as part of it as well. So what does that mean for county's perspective? We'll do that when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl, also candidate in the AL1 Republican runoff, which is, by the way, y'all, coming up in July. And Commissioner Carl, that's pretty darn close to being as late as they can get it, right? Or could they go later if they had to?
I don't think they can move it much later, maybe a couple of weeks at the most. So I'm pretty sure this one's going to go work this time. It's going to stick, as my grandfather would say.
So and I know that we had Secretary of State Merrill on, who had talked about, I guess, that got till the 9th of July, I think, for absentees. I think that's
correct. Yeah, you can actually order them now on our Facebook page. You can actually go on there and get the website and order them from Merrill's office and get them in. In fact, I had a lady call me yesterday. She had just sent hers back in.
Hey, I don't know if I
encourage everybody to do that, regardless of your health. It can be done. All you have to do is mark the sickness part, and they'll accept any reason if you put down sickness. They understand what it's related to.
Yeah, if y'all didn't hear that discussion the other day we had with the Secretary of State, it basically, like Commissioner Carl's saying, you could just say sickness. You don't have to say exactly what it is.
No, they're encouraging. They would like people to vote via mail on this election. Now general election, we hope everybody's going to be calmer and we'll learn a lot more from this. I mean, Don Davis, I was talking to him, Judge Davis, and he's really doing some phenomenal things. I know we probably don't want to get off on this, but, you know, he's got 20,000 pencils. He's got rubber gloves lined up. He's got surgical masks lined up. So when you come through there, if you want a mask, you want a set of gloves, and you got your own pencil that you can leave with, I mean, he's virtually eliminated people from touching anything.
Let's talk a little bit about the unified command. I've talked about it some this week. And, of course, that involves Dr. Eichel from Mobile County Health Department, involves Mayor Stimson, and it involves fellow Commissioner Mercieria Ludgood. Are the decisions made on that unified command, do they represent, does Commissioner Ludgood represent the opinions then of the other two of y'all on the commission?
No, we've had some real confusion on that. There's been a couple of things that, for example, this limiting cutting back to 10%. That was a proposal that I understand has been taken off the table after we've challenged it, and I think the public has made their voices be heard on that one. And there's another one that's possibly coming up. I'm told today, haven't seen it, don't know much about it. A similar situation, and you're probably going to have the same feedback, same pushback. But although Commissioner Ludgood does represent the county commission, it doesn't mean that we, the county commission, actually, the three of us actually agree on it.
Okay.
She's just there as a representative. And it doesn't mean she agrees on it either. She's just representing us on the board.
But is it unanimous? Does that have to be unanimous coming from the unified command? Like, can one person, like, If Dr. Eichel said, whatever, we're going to do this, we're going to make sure all people named Sean stay at home. If Mayor Stimson agreed with that, but Commissioner Ludgood didn't, would it fail? Or do you know, how does that work?
I don't know that Unified Command has any true legal authority. That I need to push out there. I mean, they can try to discourage people from doing things, but if you can't get a police officer to write a ticket or make an arrest, there's really no teeth to it. And I don't know if there's any teeth to the Unified Command. When that was brought to me, I was supposed to sit on the council myself. And with several things going on around here, I asked Commissioner Ludgood, who is an attorney, who is very knowledgeable, I asked her if she would sit on there for us, and she's doing a good job. But I truly don't, and she's questioning some of the legal stuff, I understand. I have not talked to her. We don't communicate that way up here. And she's questioned some of the legalities of some of the things that they want done also. So hurrah for her. She's a pretty good check and balance system.
All right. So I want to shift gears. So something actually we talked about a little bit earlier, and that was money and what could be coming to the county level and all, but what about revenues coming into the county? Do you get those numbers? Is it a week by week? Is it month or is it quarterly? Can you see if you've had the sales tax, how much sales tax revenue lost has been to the county?
No, but that, and today I wouldn't want to see it. It'll be scary. But we'll get it on a quarterly basis, and ours actually come through, you know, majority of it comes through the state, because now most all businesses are paying directly to the state, and that would be city and county taxes. You know, we anticipate it to be much, much, much less. And so much of the county is based on our revenues come from property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So we may not be hurt as bad as the cities, but there will come a day when it'll catch up with the county also. Because, you know, quite frankly, you know, if it keeps going the way it's going, property is going to be devalued. So your taxes would come down, the basis points. So the main thing we need folks on right now, let's get back to a normal life. And I hate it when people say it'll never be normal. I totally disagree with that. I totally disagree with that.
You do. I mean, do we get back to some new normal? I think so. I do think we have scars on this, Commissioner. I don't think in 2 years you and I are talking and we forget about this. This is big enough. I don't think in 10 years.
We don't forget about 9/11, but we haven't changed our life.
Oh, I disagree. Look at all the things we have to do. Look at all the things we have to do.
Now you got me there. Especially going on an off aircraft.
Yes.
And Homeland Security and some of the things they could look at that couldn't look at but prior to 9/11. You're right on that one.
So I wonder if there won't be. It's not that we're not going to be Americans and all that stuff, but I do wonder if, you know, some of the things you talked about in a joking way, but, you know, being elected official, not shaking hands, I think there'll be people down the road that will be like, hey, let me give you a fist bump or so, you know, or air fist bump or something like that, just because we don't know. And the other side of this, too, is with the criticism that the president's gotten and governors in other states have for being prepared for a pandemic. You know, if y'all prepared, I'm not saying don't, but if y'all at the end of this were trying to stock up and prepare for the next pandemic, it seems like y'all would logically stock up on the things we needed in this pandemic. And I'm always scared that the next pandemic or whatever it could be something completely different. We don't even know what to stock up on.
I think the problem we've got here, so much of our stuff is made overseas. We don't have the manufacturing capabilities here. Yeah. You know, that's again, that's the root of the real problem. It's not that we didn't stock up. We don't have availability to it. And if we had those 20% of those plants still here, if we had, you know, a percentage of those plants still here, it would be a different story, much different story. Because you can't store, like, rubber goods, those N95 masks that have rubber in them. You can't store those in a heated environment for 7 or 8 or 9 years. That rubber just falls apart.
Yeah. So, what do you do? I mean, so if people are critiquing the federal government or state governments, if we talk about a county level, what do you do? Do you have some meeting after this and say, what should we do to be ready going forward?
Well, it's easy to sit at home and judge these elected officials and say what they did wrong.
Yep.
You know, we're in a situation here we've never been in before. If it was a hurricane, you could judge us.
Yeah.
You could judge us because we know how to respond to a hurricane. I mean, it feels like a year-long hurricane that we're living in right now. But it's hard for me to judge any elected official right now because all they're doing is they're trying to respond to the best of their knowledge to an area they've never had to be, they have never been in before. I mean, I've never been in an area where I can't walk into a crowd of people and try to find out what's going on and communicate. I mean, now I'm stuck in an office looking at cars going up and down the road. Going, you know, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? It's just a desperate feeling.
And I think you're echoing the sentiments of a lot of folks out there that are frustrated. And I think it's fair enough to say we don't know.
As Americans, we want to take care of one another. Yep. That's our first reaction. That's our first response is take care of them. We just don't know how to do it.
The only
thing we can do is stay at home. And by staying at home, you feel like you're doing nothing. But in fairness, that's exactly what we need to be doing. But if you're watching the numbers, and I'm watching them every day, and yes, they haven't peaked yet, but you're going to start seeing the numbers slide down the back. You're going to start seeing them level out, just like they are in New York, how they've done in California and Oregon, some of the other spots. And the flu will always be with us. That will always be part of our life. We'll have. You know, I figured out the other day that drug, that malaria drug they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I did a missionary trip over in Africa, and 12 days before we went and 12 days after we got back, and the whole time I was there in Africa, I actually took that medicine.
So you've already got it in the system.
I guess. I don't know if it stays in the system, but I never had any problems with it.
Well, we talked about that a bit on the show last week, and if people want to catch that podcast, Dr. Irvin kind of walked through hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pack. Commissioner Carl, I'm up against the end of the hour. Oh. Thank you for your time, and please come back on with us soon.
Stay safe.
All right,
take care, Sean.
All right, coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Hey, if you're a business that's been denied a claim over business interruption, you want to listen up.